across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, the hazy shores of Lake Wissota, where it's still another beautiful day up north. It's Thursday, June 15th, 55 degrees up here on the lake, 61 in Fond du Lac, Phillips coming in at 43, Arcadia 55, Spooner 48 degrees. Coming up on the show this morning, pet peeves that Trump getting actual work done. As we review the week's events at the state capitol, Joe Zepecki will review the petty peeves that seem to dominate Republican activity, cutting budgets for UW diversity efforts, restricting funds for streetcars, micromanaging school district decisions. We'll try to find evidence of some big picture ideas, solutions, and more as we also break down the two-part deal that was reached between Republicans and Governor Tony Evers. There's something there that everyone can like. There's something there that everyone can hate, but it is most decidedly an unbalanced compromise, and we'll explain why coming up in just a few minutes here. In our second hour, in our hometown health segment, Dr. Kristen Lyerly talks to a nuclear analyst turned cosmetics creator whose Wisconsin-based lab works on personal care products that are both natural and functional, a combination often seen as either or in the makeup aisle. We also have Brewers tickets that we're giving away a little later on this hour, so you'll want to stick around for that. And if you have comments on the stories that you're hearing, our studio line is 844-967-2789, and our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And it occurred to me that while I'm always asking you to send in any notes or make any phone calls, you know, about things that you're hearing, we should also make sure that you know the suggestion box is perpetually open. In other words, if there are things that you know you would like to provide in the way of feedback, what do you want to hear on an early morning radio show? What do you miss that you used to hear elsewhere? What seems to be missing? You want more music, less music, more sports talk? Doesn't mean we're going to do all those things, but I would like to know what you're all thinking. You are up at an ungodly early hour compared to, you know, when some people have to get up and going, and we'd like to know what you're thinking, like the old 80s song said. All right, Aaron Zomers is in Madison with us now as well, and good morning to you. I was just trying to look out the window. I wanted to figure out if we were getting more or less hazy. You probably have it a little hazier than we do up here if that smoke is starting to dissipate up in our direction.
Yeah, I know yesterday it was getting hazier than it has been the past few days.
Mm-hmm. It was stinky. You know, you could really smell the smoke compared to the last time that it got all hazy. And we had some of the worst air quality in the country yesterday in parts of the upper Midwest. And so it was just not a good condition. It was a good day just to stay inside an air-conditioned bubble.
Yeah, I was in my car for a lot of the time that I was outside. So hopefully I didn't breathe too much of it in. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's the air conditioner was definitely our friend here. As I was looking at headlines to share, I wanted to pass along this one first to give a very sarcastic pat on the back to everybody who's boycotting Bud Light because, you know, they're so frail and delicate that they couldn't handle that one trans celebrity had a personalized can of Bud Light, and it turned into something so much bigger, rooted in something so much uglier. And I want to congratulate all of those snowflakes, because as a result, you who pretend to be flag-waving Americans and you know don't want as many Mexicans in this country, etc., well, here's what you did. Bud Light was America's number one selling beer since 2001, and it's not anymore. Now, I don't feel any, you know, I don't feel that bad simply because there's a lot of Milwaukee beers and Wisconsin beers, Chippewa Falls beers, New Glarus beers that I think people should be drinking instead. But here's my point. The number one selling beer in America now is made in Mexico. Bud Light now has only about 7% of retail store sales, while Modelo has about 8%. Beer from Mexico is number one selling beer because of snowflake attitudes over one trans person that has cost an American company, well, out of St. Louis anyway, you know, its stock price, which affects the portfolio and the retirement accounts of a whole lot of people, could affect American jobs as well. So good work out of you. All I can think of is the Charlton Heston scene at the end of Planet of the Apes and saying, you blew it up. Good work out of you guys. Coming up in the newsletter from Up North News, it goes out every morning about 5 a.m. And in there, Christina Lurie has a story telling us which community is getting an indoor park with multiple slides, some of them up to 24 feet tall, kind of like the giant slides that you find at the state fair and elsewhere. Also, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says no to expanding Medicaid, but he's not saying no way to eventually legalizing medical marijuana. So say what you will there about the speaker's priorities. And we continue our series on Wisconsin restaurants featured on the Food Network show, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. So all of that is in the Up North News newsletter. You can sign up for it by going to upnorthnewswi.com and clicking on newsletter up in the top banner there. And you can follow the shows of Up North News Radio by going to the website of Civic Media, civicmedia.us. You can follow all of our shows there. You can sign up to subscribe to the shows as a podcast so that if you're not up at 6 o'clock in the morning, but are still listening and interested in the show, you can catch it and then send us your feedback. Email us at radio@upnorthnewswi.com. All right, we will update a very busy day and night at the state capitol coming up next. You're up north.
You maniacs! You blow!
Everybody's Talking was featured prominently in the 1969 film Midnight Cowboy, and that was singer-songwriter Harry Nilsson, who was born on this day in 1941, passed away in 1994. He also had a couple of top 10 singles with Without You and the kind of goofy song Coconut. Harry Nilsson will have more in terms of today's history lesson and music break coming up in just a little bit. In sports, this is not the easiest time to be a Brewers fan. Still a Brewers fan. Got a big weekend series coming up with Pittsburgh, but we're going to have to recover from what is now the sixth straight loss after falling to the Twins yesterday afternoon in Minneapolis 4-2. This is now officially a slump. The Brewers looked strong out of the gate with back-to-back solo home runs in the second inning, but then nothing. No threat by the bats for the rest of the game. In fact, from the third inning on, Twins pitchers only faced one over the minimum number of batters. And the Twins only scored in the third inning, but it was four runs, and that was the game. So the Brewers remain behind Pittsburgh in the National League Central, and that's where we pick up for this weekend. There's a six-game homestand. The Brewers are off today, and then come Friday, three games against Pittsburgh, get that homestand started. So you have a chance to get out there and will the Brewers back into the win column. And I'm going to help you out with that by giving away some Brewers tickets later this hour. We've got tickets to Saturday afternoon's game at American Family Field. It's a 3 o'clock start. And so during our history lesson and music break at 6:50, I'm going to give you instead of Wisconsin trivia, we're going to do a little Pittsburgh trivia since the Pirates are coming to town and we want everybody jazzed up to try to sweep the Pirates if possible. So a little question about Pittsburgh. And if you can survive the answer, you can call up and potentially win tickets for that. In the meantime, in the Fox Valley, catch the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3 and 1100 AM. And on News from the Center, WRCE and Richland Center 107.7 FM. 1450 AM. All right, let's talk about the state budget and what all happened yesterday in terms of the two-part deal that Governor Evers struck with legislative Republicans. And then at 6:30, we'll have some further background from Joe Zepecki, though I'll note that we recorded that just prior to the Assembly and Senate debate. So I'm going to start by telling you what all happened yesterday. Now, fortunately, the state has a $7 billion surplus. And that should have made yesterday a very, I don't know, happy bipartisan deal between Evers and Republicans who've controlled the legislature and who have been weakening local schools and local governments since 2011. But we do have that surplus, thanks to multiple factors, not the least of which is the existence of federal pandemic aid, but also how Governor Evers chose to use it in a way that avoided a massive wipeout of small businesses. And as a result, the businesses survived, tax revenue rebounded, and we have a surplus. So this could have been a positive bipartisan occasion using the surplus to fix the way that state government shares its tax revenue with local governments and funds schools. There was tremendous opportunity here for everyone to get something, eliminating the personal property tax, fixing shared revenue, investing in public schools, and like it or not, investing in private schools, because you have split government, Republicans in control of the legislature, a Democrat in the governor's office. But it was not an overwhelmingly positive day because Republicans had to be what they've been for years. There would be no saving local communities and the state's largest city without extracting a price from taxpayers, a big price, handing over even more money so the state has to pay for two parallel school systems. Micromanaging how local governments and school officials spend money and how they handle local sales taxes. And an unwarranted and many said all but racist attack on efforts to provide opportunities for hardworking folks who've had to put up with generations of subtle and not so subtle limits on what they have the capability to achieve because of the color of their skin. But Republicans have decided to declare war on those efforts to combat systemic racism. There were painful concessions made as a result, but we have to acknowledge there was no pain felt on the conservative side of the Assembly and Senate chambers. They made no compromises, only demands. What they might have considered a generous concession was simply doing their job, something they've neglected for more than a decade, and now finally increasing the amount of revenue shared with local governments. So how did we get here? I will use as background a nice wrap-up story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel by Jesse O'Poin, Molly Beck, and Allison Durr that says the state, as we've described here, has been sharing a stagnant amount of revenue with the city for more than two decades. More than two decades of flat shared revenue. Of course, inflation hasn't stayed flat all that time. And they've imposed limits on government's ability to raise revenue through other means like sales taxes or property taxes. At the same time, over in the city of Milwaukee, they have an annual pension contribution to make that has been spiking while other costs have been rising. In other words, if state legislators had merely done their job all these years, local governments would be in good shape. The city of Milwaukee would have the funding to make its pension contributions and provide essential services. But they didn't, and so now they get to be seen as riding to the rescue of a problem they created. Now, as the Journal Sentinel story notes, it's not all about Milwaukee. Other municipalities, for example, with fewer than 110,000 residents, will receive a minimum 20% boost to the aid they receive from the state. In all, local revenue sharing will go from $192 million to $207 million. So a nice boost, but as many Democratic members of the legislature pointed out, still not nearly enough if they had only kept up with inflation all of these years. The deal allows Milwaukee County to add to its current 0.5% sales tax and bring it up to 0.9%. The bill allows the city of Milwaukee to pursue a 2% tax, but both sales taxes don't happen at all unless 2/3 of the county board and the common council members take a vote on it. And they'll have to shut down the pension system and move new employees into the state system. There was, of course, all of the micromanaging as well, restricting funds that could be used to promote downtown with a streetcar line. And of course, dumping on the efforts to fight racism known as DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion programs. Still, it did pass the state Senate, interestingly, on a bipartisan vote. There were 6 Republicans who voted against the deal. There were 6 Democrats who voted for the deal. And so off it went to the state assembly. And so in the assembly, Democratic leader Greta Neubauer talked for a moment about the impact on her community of Racine.
For more than a decade, local communities have been forced to do more and more with less and less. In my community, that has meant cutting over 100 positions in the city, providing less essential services, and deferring critical maintenance. The state simply has not kept up with its end of the bargain. The reality is that while this bill might start us down the path of providing additional resources, it just does not meet the moment. And of course, as has been discussed, it has completely irrelevant, harmful, offensive provisions. We can all see what is happening around the country. Diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives are under attack from the GOP. And we could spend all day speculating about why that is. But what I will say now is that the racial disparities that persist in our state are absolutely unacceptable. And I cannot understand why my colleagues on the other side of the aisle will not work with us to address them.
But in the end, the bill also passed the assembly yesterday, 68-26, and now heads to the governor. So that's part one of the deal, the reform to shared revenue, with strings attached. Then it was time to get to the other side of the deal, and that was school funding, both for public and for voucher schools. And that passed the Senate last evening, then went on to the assembly. State Senator Chris Larson noted that it seems like such a coincidence that they can never have a great debate about voucher schools and the voucher program. They can't do that because the topic only ever seems to come up as being rolled into a state budget bill that must pass, that there hasn't been just a good, separate, independent discussion on a voucher school system that hasn't nearly lived up to what's been promised when it was first created. And all it has done instead has become a massive drain on our local public schools. State Senator Kelda Royes, Democrat of Madison, noted that the state appears to be setting itself up for a lawsuit. She described them as profiteers taking over schools, paying for a privatization scheme, while we're shortchanging the education that we're actually supposed to be paying for. Senator Royes noted that the class of 2023, the ones that just graduated, never, ever had a school year where state support of public schools kept up with inflation. They always had to make do with less. That's all they've ever known. Small wonder when you ask adults, young adults, why they left or are considering leaving Wisconsin when they saw how they were treated all those years. And I would add parenthetically, the complete inaction about school shootings. Still, the Senate did approve the school bill 24-9 and sent that off to assembly as well. So is it all worth it, this grand compromise? Well, what we got was, in the words of State Representative Chris Sinicki, political ransom games, something that she would have never supported if they were separate bills. She considered the attacks on DEI to be racist attitudes now codified into state statutes. And while she was disappointed that Governor Evers agreed to it, she understands the way that Democrats were essentially forced into a corner. And she said, I feel like we're stuck in this never-ending hell of unconstitutional maps, but we must live to fight another day. And so the deal has been passed. And now Democrats who would like to do more for public schools will have to wait and see if a newly progressive-controlled state Supreme Court provides fair maps so that there's fair competition on election day, either in 2024 or in 2026, that might enable a different legislature to take a different attitude about all of these measures in some future budget. But this is the one that was agreed to, negotiated, likely to be signed by the governor, though the governor did note yesterday, as far as a separate matter, the University of Wisconsin system, Robin Voss wants to cut the budget only because they have these diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and positions at the UW. Governor Evers said he would not sign a state budget with a UW cut, calling it irrational and ridiculous when, again, you consider we have a surplus of nearly $7 billion. Some more reaction about all this from Joe Zepecki is coming up right after this break. You're up north. Back now on Up North News Radio, and as we do every Thursday, we take a little time to visit with Joe Zepecki about things going on in Wisconsin politics. Hello, Joe.
How you doing?
Very good, thank you. Let's start where we left off last week. The state Democratic Convention was about to get going. It has since transpired. No big news other than Governor Tony Evers probably cracking a joke about a third term. You know, it wasn't exactly a formal announcement, but, you know, as somebody who advises candidates and elected officials, I'm assuming you would call that good advice for the governor to refer to himself as potentially three-term Tony.
Yeah, I view this as both cute and very strategically smart. You know, the governor needs to have leverage in these negotiations with Republicans in the legislature. And frankly, we're seeing the value of that and the importance of it. I know we'll talk about the state budget later. But the fact that the governor has a full two years left for sure and might be interested in re-upping for another four gives him more leverage to negotiate because Republicans haven't been able to beat him statewide. And, you know, the operating assumption has been that Evers would do two terms and then you know, exit stage left. But the idea of him running for a third term is not crazy. He is a successful, popular governor. And when you think back to folks like Tommy Thompson, you know, stranger things have happened. So I thought it was both cute and strategically sound. And you know, the folks in the room ate it up because they love this governor and how hard he's fighting for our kids and to do what's right for the state of Wisconsin. So well played, governor.
Very much so. And on top of that, you had Republicans that were so convinced after 2018 that he was going to be a one and done. I mean, they put the brakes on so many things, assuming that they, you know, that Republicans would do well in midterm elections again and do well in 2022. They did not. And when you look at the margin that Janet Protasiewicz won by following up just months after that, you can definitely see where the Governor Evers and his team want to keep that leverage out there. Like, you know, you're not necessarily going to get some first timer, you know, three years from now.
The ground has shifted. And as the governor also reminds folks, he tripled his margin of victory from 2018 to 2022. That's landslide, Tony.
That's right. Well, he has worked out a compromise with legislative Republicans. This one we always saw coming as soon as the governor won a second term, that the only way they were going to get something done in 2023 was going to be something that might be a little tough for both sides. Folks like Evers, a former state superintendent, it couldn't have been great to see how much more money has to go into each individual private school voucher. But he also did receive big boosts for public schools, not as much as he originally sought, but probably more than he would have received under any other deal. That said, as you've watched some of the reaction from all sides as a result of this, is this pretty much what we're going to get? No last minute dramatics. And, you know, do you feel like it's something that's ultimately going to be signed and both sides will put behind them?
Well, that's a lot of questions in one, let's take them one at a time here. So I don't anticipate any surprises. Republicans are sort of living up to their end of the bargain. You mentioned the school funding. This week, they passed out of joint finance more than $1 billion increase for K-12 public schools. They also increased that voucher amount. As you said, that's long been a priority for Republicans. And of course, there are some folks, particularly on the left, who are displeased with that. And I hear their concerns. We don't need to fund two separate public school systems in the state of Wisconsin. And the reality was this: nobody was going to get everything they wanted, and everybody was going to have to swallow a few things they didn't like. So we haven't seen the legislative text for the next piece of this, but I feel like this is a good faith showing by Republicans thus far that they have lived up to their end of the bargain. Now, in terms of whether people are going to be able to move on, I certainly hope so. This is not a perfect deal, but we can't let perfect be the enemy of the good. It is going to help municipalities, not just Milwaukee, but across the state, get more in terms of shared revenue, be better able to meet their obligations and do the sort of basic requirements of local government. That's a good thing. And the fact that we also get more money for schools is a really good thing as well. So far, so good. Grand bargain remains on track.
Apart from the grand bargain is then the rest of the state budget itself, which
going less well.
Going less well. There seems to be a lot of, I would call it the petty peeves of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, micromanaging, school boards and dictating whether they have to hire officers or not, micromanaging cities and whether a city can use funds for a streetcar or not, whether the University of Wisconsin system can continue to pursue diversity, equity, and inclusion, and all of the little petty things, as well as the big one, like, rejecting the expanded College of Engineering on the Madison campus, just makes me wonder if there is any kind of a governing philosophy with legislative Republicans, or if it's all just about these, little petty cuts and some big rejections.
Well, Republicans like to talk about term limits, and given how long Robin Voss has been Speaker of the Assembly, he's kind of making the case for term limits, I suppose, because the longer he's been in that position of leadership, I think the sort of further afield from what he would have defined as his governing philosophy maybe 10, 12 years ago, he has gotten. If the one consistent through line of Republican control of the state legislature since 2010 has been Republicans in Madison taking more and more decisions out of the hands of local government, believing that they know best. My father's Republican Party, your father's Republican Party, our grandfather's Republican Party, they were the party of local control, saying those closest to the citizens should be making those decisions. And now they have really lost the plot when it comes to that. So you see these absurd, almost astonishing decisions and choices. Like, let's just take, for example, the engineering building on the campus of the UW-Madison. There is almost never an inch of daylight between Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce and the Republican Party. But WMC was begging, along with 10 or 11 other business groups, we got to get this engineering building done. It's going to be good for the economy. It's going to be good for the state. And Wisconsin Republicans in the legislature just say, nope, not going to do it because we're mad about this other thing. It doesn't make sense. When you look at, Speaker Voss made some news this week on Medicaid expansion, saying as long as I am Speaker, Wisconsin will not expand Medicaid. I think he's probably wrong and he should be careful about drawing bright lines. But it just sort of embodies the insanity of this was a political move that he made about 10 years ago, and everything has changed since then. We've had a global pandemic. The feds have lived up to honoring their commitments. The Supreme Court has found Obamacare constitutional multiple times. And so Robin Voss, stuck in the past, is saying, I don't want to save the state $1.6 billion, which would have funded all of that education increase, by the way. I don't want to cover 89,700 more people and make sure they have access to basic health care. I don't want the thousands of Wisconsinites who are on the margin, sort of on the line, with more ability to take more hours and get a second job, even though employers in the state keep saying they don't have enough employees. So this would be a real win-win-win. 40 other states have done it, including ruby red states like Oklahoma. The politics have changed. The numbers have changed. It makes good sense. Sooner or later, he's going to have to budge, or he's going to have to go the way of the dodo bird and not be Speaker of the Assembly anymore, because this is going to happen. It's just a question of when.
Yeah. Instead, what we've got is just the unending petulance.
It's hubris.
Yes. Hubris. Yeah. So one thing that may be getting done deals with the way that alcohol is regulated in Wisconsin. We've had something called a three-tier system since the end of Prohibition, so that no one entity could have a monopoly on, brewing something, wholesale distribution, and then retail sales. And that's all about to be shaken up. And we don't have to get bogged down in all the details, but is this something that looks like it's truly bipartisan, meaning that the governor is likely to sign whatever a Republican-controlled legislature sends to him?
Well, I certainly hope so. And I think I'm optimistic that that'll be the case. You know, that three-tier system worked for a very long time. And the world changed, right? There's been innovations. There's been an explosion in like craft brewing and home brewing and distilling. And so at some point, government has to catch up and rewrite the rules of the road to make sure that a market economy works for everybody. It protects, you know, the taxpayers and the folks who are purchasing alcohol, and it, you know, sets the rules for everybody else who's involved in the business. So I'm optimistic. I don't think everybody in the old three-tier system is going to be super happy with what they get, but they knew that they had to update the rules of the road to keep pace with the innovations and the new sort of alcohol economy in Wisconsin. So I think they'll get it done. They ought to get it done. And we ought to take this moment to remind people, don't listen to Republicans when they tell you they never met a regulation they didn't want to get rid of. Regulations are essential for a market-based economy, for a capitalist system, which is what we operate in. They're just talking nonsense when they say all regulations are bad things. These will be updated new regulations that work better for the alcohol industry and for we, the consumers of, you know, not just goods and services, but a fair amount of alcohol in this state.
What happens is you box yourself in, and I've seen Republicans do this before with these bright lines, and, you know, then end up with these internal fights. We even saw signs of that in the congressional delegation this week, where Derek Van Orden allegedly ripped into Freedom Caucus members that their standoff with Kevin McCarthy is taking, you know, time away from everything that's got to get done. But they're caught up that way because they're so busy defending Donald Trump over what seems to be some very apparent violations. Now, this week, former House Speaker Paul Ryan was very critical of Donald Trump, but again, he's no longer an elected official. Is there any chance anytime soon that any elected Wisconsin Republicans will look at all of this evidence and start to make that Nixonian move toward saying to a fellow Republican, you need to step aside?
No. I don't know what else there is to say. From the Republican candidates for president on down, they're falling in line. They, you know, you would at least have hoped that somebody like Congressman Gallagher would have stood up and said, this is bad. You would have hoped that somebody like Congressman Van Orden, who served as the pointy end of the spear, you know, he would have you believe as a Navy SEAL. Like, these folks should understand the threat to national security that the carelessness that former President Trump exhibited with the way he kept these documents and the number of times he broke the rules, broke the law. I mean, like, this indictment looks pretty bulletproof. It does not look political. They've got the goods. And why Republicans can't unmoor themselves from him and do the right thing for our national security and the rule of law is beyond me. I view it as shameful, but I know they have their reasons. I just wish they were better reasons.
Exactly. And you use two great examples there. I mean, Derek Van Orden, a veteran who all the time talks about veterans and national security, had the opportunity to get out of the gates and say, see, I told you I'm not like, you know, all other Republicans, or Gallagher. Same way, if you're going to talk about China, if you're going to talk about national security, you know, again, why wouldn't you want to be? Yeah, you're going out on a plank a bit, but when you look at the evidence, you've got to think this is one of those instances where you're going to be seen more as a leader rather than, you know, an anomaly in your party. But they neither one took it.
They all run scared because they don't want to get primaried by, you know, the Trump wing of the party. So instead, they're making the Trump wing of the party their home. It's not a recipe for long-term success. Long-term success can be defined by what it's going to be like when those gentlemen look themselves in the mirror in 20 years. I hope they figure it out.
I just wonder what they think when they look at themselves, you know, just next summer, when in the throes of the campaign, one of these trials is going on, And as I, you know, as I mentioned yesterday, much like Fox News and Dominion, you know, as with each drip, drip, drip of discovery, it finally built to the case where, you know, it was over on day one of the trial. And well, these Republicans are going to have to put up with the drip, drip, drip till then. Joe Zepecki will follow it.
And we should be really clear. It's Wisconsin Republicans who none of them are being critical. There are other Republicans in Congress, including some who you would be surprised are saying, this is really bad. This was a threat to national security, and they are finding that off ramp. So other Republicans are doing it. It's just so far we're not seeing Wisconsin Republicans do it other than formers like Paul Ryan.
Formers indeed. Joe Zepecki, thank you so much.
Talk to you next week.
Hey, your chance to win Brewers tickets is coming up next. Stick around. You're up north. Let me tell you what I can see here when I think of The Lion King hitting theaters on this day in 1994. Would be my then four-year-old younger daughter had a little stuffed animal, little baby Simba, and stood up on the top of the couch and then holds the baby Simba up, you know, every time this song would come on during the movie. It's adorable. She'd be embarrassed at the age of 32 that her dad is still telling the story, but it just makes my heart swell up every time. Lion King made over $300 million over the year that it was came out in 1994. The soundtrack eventually went diamond with over 10 million copies sold. On this day in 1999, Santana released the album Supernatural, which went to number one thanks to hit singles like this one, Smooth with Rob Thomas. And for Santana, that came after a seven-year recording hiatus, and it became his first chart-topping album in 28 years. Let's do some birthdays. We did Harry Nilsson had been born on this day in 1941. Waylon Jennings was born on this day in 1937. He passed away in 2002. We'll hear a little tune from him coming up in our next hour. Actress Helen Hunt is 60 years old today. Actress Courtney Cox is 59. And again, it's another one of those things where you don't know a celebrity's birthday. And I did not realize, since my birthday is just in a couple of weeks here, that Courtney Cox and I were almost the same age. She's aging better than I am. Ice Cube is 54 today, born O'Shea Jackson. He was born this day in 1969. And actor Neil Patrick Harris, Tony of the Tony Awards and How I Met Your Mother and Doogie Howser and so much other work, is turns the big 5-0 today, 50 years old. Music birthdays include Russell Hitchcock. You might not know the name. He's 74 years old, and you know him better as one of the lead singers of Air Supply. I'm all out of love. I'm so lost without you. I know you were right, believing for so long. I'm all out of At this point, when people put their hands up and they wave them in the air, I'm of the generation that was cigarette lighters when you're out in the concert crowd. Now it's everybody airing with their phones and their phone lights, right?
Yeah, I remember the first concert I went to where it was all people with their cell phone flashlights, and I was like, whoa, this is weird.
See, it was less weird as lighters, because, you know, a flame is something kind of natural, but
right.
I guess you do what you can do. Joy Division released their debut album, Unknown Pleasures. Aaron's going to tell me more about that because it didn't chart.
Yeah, unfortunately it didn't, but it was still very influential and critically acclaimed, and it's one of the most important albums of the post-punk era. A lot of artists cite it as inspiration, including people like Kurt Cobain, but he had a lot of weird stuff inspiring him.
I guess I don't think of post-punk in 1979, but again, I'm no music historian, so especially of the punk genre. And then you got to the grunge genre. Nirvana released their debut album, Bleach, this day in 1989. On that same day, The Offspring released their self-titled debut album, but only on vinyl. The CD and cassette wouldn't come for another 6 years. And on this day in 1991, Paula Abdul had the number one song.
Oh, my heart. Hurry, hurry,
It was her fifth number one single. She was on a roll at that point in 1991. And on this day 6 years ago, 2017, Jay-Z became the first rapper to be inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. All right, we've got Brewers tickets to give away. And because the Pittsburgh Pirates are coming to town, I thought instead of Brewers trivia or Wisconsin trivia, we'd get people motivated for the Brewers coming in. And so here comes a Pittsburgh trivia question. And the first person through with the correct answer at 844-967-2789 is going to win two tickets to Saturday afternoon's Brewer game, provided you haven't won anything in the past 30 days and provided we can email those tickets to you and provided you can use them. They are great club seats. So here comes the question, and I swear I am not making this up, but as I was looking at Pittsburgh facts and figures, this is a real thing. What ingredient do you add to a salad to make it a Pittsburgh salad? In other words, if you order a Pittsburgh salad, you're going to get just a regular old salad, but it's going to have something else on top. What is it that makes a salad a Pittsburgh salad? First person through with the correct answer at 844-967-2789 has the chance to win tickets to the Brewers game. Two tickets. If we don't give them away today, we'll just turn it into four tickets and do it again this time tomorrow. If we do get a winner, then we will have two tickets to give away tomorrow at this time for Saturday afternoon's Brewers game. Something that's going to be critically important because the Brewers lost again to the Twins 4-2 yesterday afternoon. And the Brewers now have a losing streak that is at six games. They are, what are they, one or two games behind the Pirates here and have a really good chance to make it up as Pittsburgh comes to town. So again, we're looking for the, I'm not going to say it's the disgusting answer. It's just an answer you would not expect as to what it is that makes a salad a Pittsburgh salad. And 844-967-2789 is where you go for that. All right, tomorrow we will have a Courier Newsroom national correspondent, Kia Vakil, on to review the top political stories that are affecting the country this week. And you can read Kia's reporting at upnorthnewswi.com. Always look for that there. And then coming up in Hometown Health at the bottom of our next hour, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be along. And she brings with her somebody who has a Wisconsin-based lab. She used to do nuclear analytics. Now she's a cosmetics creator. And we're going to talk about the health of your cosmetics and try to make them natural and functional at the same time. Let's see. I think Vince is calling in from the Fox Cities. And Vince, you there? Good morning. Are you with me, Vince? Hey, Vince. How are you this morning? All right. Well, good. Hey, we've got a little delay here, so I'm just going to go ahead and ask you because somebody's got to say these words out loud. Vince, what do you add to a salad to make it a Pittsburgh salad?
I'm not saying I do it frequently, but it's French fries.
It's French fries. It's French fries. Did you look it up or did you painfully know that already?
Well, the opinion of painfully is to be said, but I have family in Harrisburg, so I do know about it. That's in the Pennsylvania area. So,
okay. Well, look, I should be clear.
Just happened to know about it.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. And I should be clear that, again, it was created for people that liked steak and fries, but they were vegetarians. And so somebody put fries on a salad and it caught on. Other people dip fries into a chocolate shake. I think that's disgusting. Other people think it's great. But Vince, regardless, you're going to the Brewers game Saturday. Thank you so much for calling in. Have a great day. And Vince, stick around. All right. And if Aaron didn't get your info, then hang on the line for that. And we will do something similar tomorrow. But in the meantime, now that I've got you rethinking your lunch plans or maybe churdling your breakfast, stick around. We'll have more in our next hour. You're up north.